Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Outlawed Picks podcast. Today, we are talking about UFC, hang on a minute, 326. I could barely keep up these days. So many numbers. We need to go back to names. Sudden Impact. They, straight away with the question in the comments, what was your favorite UFC name back in the day? Sudden Impact was a good one. I'm trying to think what else. Vendetta. That was also a good one. I think that was Tito versus Ken Shamrock. We need to go back and watch some of these old Super Saturday, that was the one I was talking about the other day with Tito against Vitor Belfort, I think. Mm-hmm. UFC 41. Anyway, we're going to go back to names for UFC because I can't keep up with all the numbers. UFC 326. The BMF belt on the main event. You're into it.
We got to do it like it's different. It's BMF. It's like...
Oh, is that right? Okay. I should put my hood up or something. Well, I've got my Wu-Tang. Hoodie. They should do the theme song for the BMF belt. And one thing I will say about a Wu-Tang hoodie, just as a complete tangent to start the podcast, they've always got a good hood. There's a lot of hoodies, and you get the hoodie, and it's like it fits like that, and you're like, my forehead's still going to get wet. You can always rely on a Wu-Tang hoodie to make you look like a Shaolin monk.
Yeah.
There's your first observation of the podcast. We're going to get into some MMA stuff later on, but we offer all kinds of advice on this podcast, including great sponsors. So we've got Vortex Performance Academy. We're going to give them a shout out. I called them by their old name the other week, so I've got to get it right. Vortex Performance Academy. Go and follow them on Instagram. They're based in Chester. They're doing all kinds of amazing things. The food prep is awesome as well. Paul Reed's an absolute superstar in mixed martial arts. He just does so much for the industry and for all the fighters, as well as, you know, the highest levels, you know, the likes of Paddy Pimblett. Molly McCannu got a win in boxing the other day. She looked great. Man, she's improved so quickly with her hands, hasn't she? So a shout out to Vortex Performance Academy.
He also has a lot of like people on the card. Vortex Academy in the London card.
Yeah, he'll be like Khabib in Dubai the other week. He was in eight corners. He was like that guy from the Olympics. Yeah, had to keep switching his jackets. Like we have black shirts and white shirts in the corner team, and for whatever reason, he had to keep alternating. It was like white shirt off, black shirt on, black shirt off, white shirt on. So yeah, that'll be Paul at the at UFC London, especially at the weigh-ins with everyone having to make weight. So give Vortex Performance Academy a follow. And also Zapply. You know I love these guys. So I've bought a little bit of a prop today. And the reason why is because I don't like supplements. Probably based on the fact that I spent years and years in training camp. I actually was watching you doing it the other day, sorting out all your pills into your
Do you remember when Hannah was like, oh, the nice thing my training partner did was sort out each one of the supplements before, like that was like she treasured
it's,
that.
Yeah, it's like that's a real act of service in a training camp to sort out someone's supplements. And like, so I thought to myself, I'm gonna show you what I used to carry around. I used to have that in a bag, didn't I?
Yeah.
In my suitcase. And that was all of my supplements for various different things. And I need more supplements and different supplements now. I'm obviously getting on in life, you know. I should put the hood up to cover all the grey hair that's coming through. But honestly, the reality is, I've been training quite a lot over the past few weeks. I've dropped bag work back into my training sessions as well, which is just a different kind of impact in the joints. And I feel it the next day. I wake up and I'm like, man, I ate so much more than I used to. I've got to be honest. It's called T1. Mm-hmm. I'm still getting through this old pack, but I'm almost out, as you can see. That's all I take with me now when I'm traveling. I just two of those after my first meal. It's got all 14 ingredients that I need. Everything's tested and well balanced. It just saves me so much time. And of course, I've got the creatine here. I talk about this a lot. This is from Paul Reed at Vortex. He's always talking, especially at my age, brain health, etc., etc. I've taken a lot of punches and blah, blah, blah. Like, creatine is essential for brain health as well as obviously athletic performance. So like between this, the T1 and the creatine, I'm all set and I'm feeling good. I'm training regularly. I was in bed last night at 10 o'clock. I was fast asleep for 9 hours. You know what I mean? It's working. And I've been sticking with it for a while.
There's definitely a difference.
You've noticed, right? Yeah. I even just sorting out these.
That's so annoying.
It was just
that
a drag. I'm like, and I lose patience with it, and I don't keep consistent with it. And honestly, having two things to think about, bang a spoonful of that in my coffee in the morning, and have those after breakfast, and I'm all set. Go and grab some Zapply. It is really, really good stuff. I've actually had a bunch of messages as well.
Yeah.
I don't know, loads of people have been messaging me about it. And we've got people on the card. We've got Derrida on the card this week. He uses Zapply. He's talking about it a lot. So tryzapply.com is the website. Carl Froch was talking about it the other day. He needs it because he's got John Fury after him. Did you see that?
Wait, what happened?
My goodness. So it was a boxing event, and they obviously had the desk there. Carl Froch is one of the analysts for, is it Sky Sports, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
And he'd obviously said something to upset John Fury, which is an easy thing to do. You know, John Fury.
Dude, he's scary. He's, like,
do you remember when we filmed with him and he was showing us the teeth
so
marks?
Scared.
In his forearms?
I was like, if I'm, you know, have like to speak with him around, it's just a presence. Like,
yeah.
Scary.
So Carl Froch is going to need his Zapply because John Fury's chasing him down. Tryzapply.com is the website. Go and get yourself some of this stuff. Honestly, they've got Bonjasky on there.
And we have the code, don't we? Outlaw 15.
Outlaw 15. I always forget.
Don't
the
forget.
Code. I always forget. What
oh,
the code
don't forget
is.
To like as well. I remember now.
Yeah. Oh, and there's that other YouTube channel I need to give a shout out. Do you remember remember the purple belt? I want to get it exactly correct. Jamie, have you heard of these guys? Purple. Here we go. Purple Belt Analytics. Analytics, is that right? Am I saying that right? He's only had a few videos up. He's got nearly 2,000 followers, but these videos are really good. We sat and watched most of them the other day, didn't we? I've watched all of his videos now.
Yeah, they're short. They're like 5 minutes and...
Really good.
Like, gives a lot of succinct information.
Particularly the Can Brits Wrestle one.
Yes.
Which is very good because, you know, Brad Pickett ended up holding up our end of the equation there. But they're really good. How UFC's changed, submissions over time. Really, really interesting stuff. So go and check them out. Purple Belt Analytics. Analytics. That word's screwing with me. I don't know why. Go and check them out. Really, really good stuff. Okay, we're going to talk about some fights. Oh, I also need to give Outlaw Rum a shout out. Oh, they've just sent me a bottle of this. Thank you, my friend. You know I love you. Founders Release Lowland Special Edition Cask Aged Rum. And what I love, see, what you'll see is it's got like a red tint to it. It's because it's aged in sherry casks. God, gives it a different... I've got my little emergency sample bottle here. oh, delicious. That's for later, though. That's for later. Zapply for now. Outlaw Rum for later. Vortex for tomorrow. Okay. Should we get in some MMA stuff?
Yes.
First of all, did you want to talk about anything about the fights that we've just watched from last night? I mean, how good did Ilona Kavanagh look?
Amazing.
Like the only one...
Amazing, composed,
right?
Just like high level, and it didn't let the moment get to him. He just really... It was just such a mature performance, especially in comparison to his fight versus Energy.
Yeah.
Where he was, you could tell he was significantly better.
He was just a bit too comfortable.
But
in
he
that
was
one,
just
he
like a little bit too, yeah. And in this one, he was so focused. And it's funny, I saw a little clip where, you know, after you walk back into the backstage and stuff, you walk past the curtains and... It's kind of like the first moment because the fight just happened, got, you know, the winner and all this. And then you're walking by everybody. And then once you pass those curtains, it's almost like, you know, and you can like see that and see you like when he hugged Ash. It was a really, it was really cool.
Yeah.
Bad for Moreno.
Yeah, but there was a couple of weird performances. So you had... Cheeto Vera on the card. You had King Green on the card, and then you had Moreno. Like they were like the three, like elder statesmen holding it down. And the only one that looked really good was King Green. I think you just got to like change your name later in your career, I think. But what I will say is that he's the older he gets, the more he starts to fight like Crazy Horse. Do you know what I mean? Like the chatting and the hands down, and I love it. I was thoroughly entertained all the way through that fight. But Zellhuber just, he just couldn't adapt to it. It was like he couldn't quite get going, especially because Green's like got his hands down and like you throw a shot and it's like missing and he's brushing the dirt off his shoulder. It was just a great performance. And the wrestling scrambles where he was kind of spinning through to stay in top position. Anybody else impress you on the card?
The girls' fight was so much fun to watch.
That was awesome.
It was like, and like the way the Regina, like she came out, she was like super cute with like the dancing, like the energy, charisma. All
was
of
that
it.
A short notice fight for her? As
yeah,
well?
3 days yeah, short. Yeah. She was replacing an Argentinian girl, Argentine.
Mm.
Yeah, Sophia.
They got
something.
A bonus, right?
Yeah, they both got a bonus, but they like threw it down. You could just tell the difference in the shots. Because Ernesta, I think the other girl's name is, she just like she throws a lot of volume, but when Regina connected, you could see her legs kind of go a little bit, and there was like quite a big difference. There also looked to be a difference in like frame.
Yeah,
I know it was a catchweight, but I mean,
but they were
one
both
had a
massive,
training.
Though,
yeah,
weren't
yeah,
they
were
like
both
tall
really
and,
tall.
Yeah,
but yeah.
It looked to me like Ernesta was more like shoulders and arms and a bit more back, whereas Regina was more lower body. But to be honest, I actually thought she was going to knock her out in the first round. She landed a shot, was it a left hook, and kind of rocked her for a second. But and dealing with the pressure, like short notice, UFC in Mexico, like it was a lot of fun to watch. It was a lot of fun, and I'm glad they got a bonus as well.
Yeah, me too.
I didn't watch a bunch of these fights because I'm getting old, so I was in bed early. But then we did pick it up on the main card. But like Marlon Vera just did not look himself. I mean, fair play to David Martinez, never stopped moving.
It was just
constant movement
for Marlon. I just, you know, maybe you've had so many fights and
string of losses. What is it, 4 in a row now?
Yeah.
O'Malley, Figueiredo, Zahabi, and...
But like, even him Martinez. Going into the arena versus him going into arena when he was having, like, a really good success, like, you could just feel the difference. You could see it. I watched it, and I was like, oh, no, this is not... It doesn't look like it's a good version of him coming out here. And just don't think that was a good version of him.
Man, and Lona Kavanagh jumping straight into the rankings... Yeah. Where was...
I think he was 15 before the fight happened. Yes.
Man, he's going to be right up there though, isn't he? He's like shortcut to the top.
Sick. But you have like Joshua Van is also super young.
That's true, yeah.
So you have like two more.
Yeah. Man, you still got Pantoja floating around though, haven't you? That's a horrible fight for anybody. Let me have a quick look at the rankings. Yeah, it was an interesting card. I felt for obviously it was great to see Lona get a win. The whole GB Top Team would just be beside themselves with that. I mean, it was one of the best performances that whole team's ever put out, I would say. But at the same time, like to watch Moreno go out like that in Mexico, I didn't realize
Moreno
he was
needs
only
to
32
not fight
as well.
In Mexico,
same
man.
As Derek Lewis in Houston, right?
Yeah, like. He's only won in Mexico one time, and I think he's lost 5.
Mm.
And the pressure is so much. And before that victory, which I think was his last fight in Mexico, the first time that he did win versus Usyk, it was like he overcame a mental barrier that was massive.
Mm. Do you think it played into the fact that because he was... Who was it he was originally supposed to fight?
Guy from Kazakhstan.
Almabayev.
Yeah.
I remember looking at that and thinking, man, that's a tough fight for him in Mexico. And then it's almost like Lona Kavanagh coming off a knockout loss. It's like, it almost looked like they were giving him a fight to kind of take some pressure off him.
Yeah.
But it almost like it backfired a little bit. And that first calf kick that he got caught with, it just changed the tone of the fight. So the rankings, as of right now, because obviously they've not been updated, Lona Kavanagh's not ranked. Morales at number 15, Bruno Silva, Charles Johnson, Tagiru Lumbekov, Steve Ersig, Alex Perez, Tim Elliott, Almabayev, Amir Albazi, then Moreno at number 6, Horiguchi, Royval, Tiara, Tyra, Manel Cap, Pantoja, and then Joshua Van. Man, there's some, like, even a, like, Manel Cap against Lona Kavanagh would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that would be fun.
That'd be a lot of fun. Even a Kyoji Horiguchi, if he's collecting, you know, veteran names, legend names, I put Horiguchi in that class. Okay, should we get on to this weekend's event?
Yes.
Because it's a good card. It's a good card.
It's a BMF
card. It's a good card. I will say last night, as we were watching the prelims, something popped up in my Instagram feed that said that Charles Oliveira was out and that Michael Chandler was stepping in.
Oh, yeah, he did that. And then he went to sleep. And so, yeah. That's it. He was just like,
so that was the last.
Oh, did you see this? And then I was like, wait, yeah. What? I was so disappointed. And then I'm like, oh, all the research I did for nothing. Well, I kind of know Chandler. And I'm like, well, I'm going to have to re-research. And then he just left.
Well, I didn't leave. I just fell asleep.
He went to bed. He's like, nah, I'll go to sleep. And then I'm like, I'm sure this would be blowing up on Instagram, even though the fights are happening. I even messaged Jamie. I'm like, dude.
Did she really? She messaged you?
Yes.
So it's fake. So it's definitely fake news then. Okay, good. I don't know where I saw it. I just, it pops in my Instagram feed. And, you know, obviously everything on Instagram is fact. So
instead of checking, you just told me.
I just said, hey, look, this has just come up on my Instagram. Look, the disclaimer is built in when I said Instagram. The disclaimer is built in. Yeah. As soon as I said Instagram, you should have been like, no, hang on a minute. Nonsense. Okay, so we're starting off with Gregory Rodriguez against Bruno Ferreira.
Yes.
This is a rematch, and the last time they fought, Bruno bingoed him.
Yes.
Right?
And here's interesting. Bruno was the replacement for Brad Tavares. And then Gregory was all like, I don't want to fight you. You just came from the Contender Series. I want to fight Brad Tavares as a veteran.
Oh,
then, bam, get starched.
Bam.
And
Did he go on to? He did go on to fight Brad Tavares, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Brad. And he knocked him out, which is even like,
yeah,
you know, like, but so more to his point of
that. So do you think he massively underestimated Bruno Ferreira? Or he was just annoyed?
I think so. Like, I think it's easy to underestimate Ferreira because he's not like that big. He's
he
just
is
like
very
a
small for
like
the
a fridge, like coming at
fridge.
You.
He's shaped like SpongeBob.
But yeah, so now we have
he's not much
Gregory
in reach,
being the replacement fighter because Bruno is supposed to fight Paulo Costa. So Rodriguez is like, I'm gonna Uno reverse you, and now I'm gonna knock you out.
Right.
So this is the drama of the story.
So basically the whole situation's been flipped.
Flipped.
Rodriguez is now coming in. But the difference is, well, I guess Bruno could underestimate him because he knocked him out in the first round the last time they fought. So he's like, I'm going to knock him out again. This guy underestimated me. And then,
yeah, especially because he got knocked out by Cannonier.
Mm. Rodriguez is better, though, when the fight gets a bit messy, isn't he?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, he tends to flow a bit better when the fight gets a bit messy, whereas Ferreira didn't really land too much on him.
No, he was just like against the...
He was backed up against the fence, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he came with the left hand.
There's a lot of things that he does like over and over again. Like he'll use that lead hook to come in with the left hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he'll throw it over and over again, but at a right time. I think instinctively he's a good fighter.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
You know, like
he's got like he's a bit of a Gastelum kind of rhythm mm-hmm. to the way that he moves.
I feel like you can underestimate how good he is of a fighter because he looks a bit like a fridge and in the division. You know, you look at Rodriguez and you're like,
he's small even for a welterweight. That was one of the videos on that Purple Belt analytics. It was about the size difference of fighters and like. In my time of welterweights, the average height was 5'10", and he's 5'10", whereas the average welterweight now is 6'1". And it's like, just generally, like, obviously the science of weight cutting's changed and people are generally changing in size anyway in the weight classes because it's attracting more people and bigger athletes are getting closer to the top. But like, if you look at this, like Bruno Ferreira's 5'10", compared to Rodriguez, who's 6'3", but there's only a 3-inch difference in the reach.
Mm.
And the way that Ferreira fights, You know what I mean? Like, one of the benefits of being shorter is that it's way more difficult to read where the punches are coming from.
Yeah.
And he's very, very good. And it's all, one of the things that Gastelum does well. It's like that kind of Gastelum roll that he has. It loads power into the punches like other people can't.
Hmm.
I mean, that left hand that he landed on in the first time was just
perfect. Yeah.
But it was a little while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, he shells up really well with his guard. He like creates a really good frame around his head, and because he's so like, you know,
yeah,
chunk. Like, dude, when you chunk, you can like
the rounded edges on a smeg exactly. fridge. Is
like
you good can, for the you Philly can... shell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which way are you going on it?
I'm gonna go for the short people.
You think for you? Fair. See, I don't know. I mean, like, well, I mean, first of all, the win that Rodriguez got over Hermanson was impressive. It was a good fight. It was a scrappy fight. He was accurate with his punching. His killer instinct at the end with that massive hammer fist.
Yeah, I feel like
massively delayed as well. Like the referee had more than enough time to get in there.
After that fight, I'm like, I don't think I'm gonna be your fan anymore.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal, that hammer fist.
Especially to Hermanson. I mean, like, to anybody else, guy. I'm like, eh, whatever. Not like that, but, you know, it's a little bit. But Hermanson, nah, man.
Yeah,
you can't do that nice to guy. Him.
I don't know. I don't know. I think we're going to get a different version of Rodriguez this time, and I think he's going to make it way more scrappy than last time. But I also think he's going to be more prepared for that single-punch knockout power that
Bruno yeah, do you brings. Think any grappling will... Because Bruno Ferreira did come from judo, right? Yeah. And then, like, Rodriguez, his forte really is his grappling, but he can't really get people to the ground. He does that thing where he, like, reaches for the single leg.
Yeah.
But
he's got a decent tie clinch, though, hasn't he?
Hmm.
So, like, it wouldn't surprise me if we see some knees from Rodriguez. Like, that's where he could use his height without having to worry too much about the reach.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Especially because if you think the majority of stuff from Ferreira is coming up, it's massively opening up his body. You know what I mean? It might be a smart way to go. But even if you just kind of smother him in early on, because Fajardo was up against the fence
mm-hmm.
when he knocked him out. So if Rodriguez can put him in that same situation again, expect those punches and smother them a little bit and then come in with knees. Kind of like what Derrida did in that last... Who was it he did it against? We'll get to it in a second. But you know what I mean? Like just kind of jamming knees up the center line. And then even... Like then Fajardo can... do the takedowns, and Rodriguez can employ his grappling skills that way.
Yeah, I just think sometimes Rodriguez becomes a different fighter, depends on how the fighter he's fighting feels about the fight. You know, yeah. Like versus like Kopylov. Kopylov was a bit like, oh, I'm a bit undersized. I don't know. Like, this guy's hitting kind of hard. And then Cannonier was like, I don't care. You know, I'm going to walk you down. Doesn't mean that he didn't take the shots. But Gregory was more on the back foot, like, oh, what's going on? He was getting caught with stuff that he wouldn't have had his confidence been a bit higher. And because Bruno Fajardo is so, like, less fight, I don't care if it's UFC or, you know, elsewhere. You can just tell, like, instinctively he's a bit more like that.
Yeah.
That, for me, will do good. Although Rodriguez has really good body kicks. And Fajardo sometimes doesn't really do anything with that. So it could hurt him. But I'm still going to go with Fajardo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to pick the opposite way then. I'm going to go with Rodriguez winning by a decision and just kind of grinding him out. And one of the other reasons why I'm going to pick that is because even though Fajardo is small for this weight, he didn't miss weight against Marvin Vettori. So I think his battle with the burrito might be similar to Gastelum's as well. And he might not only look like a fridge, but he might be in a very intimate relationship with a fridge. And he may well push himself very hard to miss weight, having known that he knocked out Rodriguez last time. And Rodriguez is like... Because he's in shape all the time, Rodriguez.
Yeah, so you know sometimes I mean? Feel, though, like people who are a bit pudgy take punches so much better than when... Like Josh Emmett, for example.
They do, for sure.
It's like... Josh you're Emma. Super.
Oh yeah, no, but he's yeah. but he's too lean.
Exactly,
like,
but
he's
that,
very brittle
because
he's
that
too
happens
lean.
With a lot of people. They're like, oh, I can make the division, so they can't make the division. But they're so brittle that you're like,
I'm not saying,
bro,
I'm not
don't
saying
have damage abs.
That Fajeda should cut to welterweight and be and have abs. But what I am saying is that he in his head, yeah, I think I he's so comfortable as a middleweight that he actually struggles to make weight, and he's going to do the same thing as Gastelum did. Did it against Marvin Vettori. I could see him doing it in this fight as well. And Rodriguez being enough of a determined
a RoboCop.
Yeah, exactly. I'll go Rodriguez by decision.
Okay.
But I do like Bruno Fajeda. Just generally, his commitment to his punches is worth a watch. Okay, let me go back to this. So next one. Oh,
I can't believe they haven't fought before.
Right? Yeah.
When 100%. I was like, I'm sure they must have fought before.
It's Drew Dober, Michael Johnson. This for me is probably the best matched fight on the card.
Yeah.
Like this is like a proper UFC fight for me. And the other thing I like about it as well is that both guys are very, very effective in winning, but they also take a lot of risks,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they can find ways to lose as well unnecessarily, right? I was chatting on Sub Radio about this the other day, and like it's the same situation with both of these guys. They've got the skills to beat anybody in the division, but sometimes they kind of work themselves out of the fight a little bit. And that's why their records are incredible. I mean, so Drew Dober, 28-15-1 no contest. Michael Johnson, 25-19. Like, what's that? What's that mass? How good's your mass, Jamie? Go on. What's that? 40, 50.
A lot.
59.
I'm not even trying.
87? 87 fights with one no contest in between them? I don't know. I think I might be wrong, but it's roughly. Michael Johnson's average fight is 11 minutes, 37 seconds as well. Like, they're evenly matched. Both born in the 80s. Shout out to the 80s kids. Both born in the 80s. Both aggressive strikers. Very different strikers,
mm-hmm.
right? Dober's, like Martinez was last night, spends 10% of the time in contact with the canvas and 90% hovering above it because he's bouncing so much, like constantly on his toes, short stance. And then Michael Johnson's kind of long and a bit lungy with his punches. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's, I think it's weird because Dober is like really bottom heavy muscled.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't, you would think he would be more planted, but I think that within itself is what makes him so bouncy. Yeah. He's so used to the bounce in and out. And I don't know if that's why his calves have developed so much.
He's very plyometric. Just generally, he's very, very plyometric. Whereas Michael Johnson's got that bit more of a kind of a lean and drag punch style like Nate Diaz, which coincidentally is probably one of his best rounds was his first round against Nate Diaz and probably his first round against Khabib. Then the fight starts to unravel a little bit. I mean, obviously the Khabib one was just a complete ironing out after that. But I felt like the Nate Diaz fight was perfectly within his reach, and he just kind of got away from him a little
bit. Yeah, I've seen like a few fights with Johnson that I'm like, dude.
On a 3-fight win streak now, though.
Mm. So, on Drew's last fight, I would just want to say, it was like... Why you laugh? It's like, here comes the...
Yeah.
All right, so, round three, right? There was the groin strike.
Propolek.
Yes.
Yes.
And there was a point deduction. And then he finished Propolek, or like right after, like immediately after. And then the commentators were like, oh no, you got to think of like, he just got groin strike. I'm like, yeah, he had more than 4 minutes. Plus, he accepted the point deduction. And, like, nobody was... It wasn't like with Kevin Holland that they're like, okay, you're going to go or what?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, let's go. And because of the point deduction, it made Drew think, I need to really go.
Yeah.
It wasn't the fact that he got groin shot that made the finish happen. It was, like, the urgency of the point deduction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Done.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. It's always kind of awkward though, like especially if, like, you know, you kick someone in the groin and then, you know, they take a bit of time to recover and then you come out and the first shot you hit them with, there's always going to be some people that are like, yeah, but that wouldn't have happened if you'd not kicked them in the groin. it almost like steals your some of your thunder.
Yeah, it was like just because it was immediately after.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the commentary was all, you'd have to think about how it was if it wouldn't have happened. But I'm like, yes, let's say that was the case if there was no point deduction. But you have to take into consideration the point deduction is what made the urgency.
Yeah.
And with that said, I think Dober fights a lot better when he has this urgency within the fight. Sometimes I feel like he can get lulled in. And Michael Johnson did a really good job at doing that to Sal Huber, especially attacking to the body, staying at the range that he wanted to do, going to the body, going to the head, and not really overextending himself. Because with Drew, you don't want to get caught with a left hook. Like, he just...
Yeah.
You know, bam, knocks people out. And he's done it to Terrence McKenney. He's done it to a lot of people, basically. So you know that that's going to be the danger. And how people have dealt with it is they've either taken him down, like I think Makhachev and Khabib, you know, like take him down, like smother him in that department, or just like keep at a better range, like Torres did, kept him off the end of the jab so he could connect with his other hand. So you can keep them, because he's short, you got to keep him at a range.
Do you think grappling comes into this?
Nah, I think they're just going to trade punches.
You think?
Yeah.
Do you think that's based on the expectation, though, of what's going to happen in the fight? Like, because people are looking at this thinking, man, this is going to be a banger of a fight.
Mm.
Like, there's almost like, if someone's going to grapple, most likely it's going to be Drew. I would imagine. And the other thing as well is this is Southpaw v Southpaw,
mm-hmm.
which means that the calf kicks on for both of them. But Michael Johnson is way more planted in his stance. He's way more like spread out. And I think Dober's going to eat his lead leg up. And then that's going to make him vulnerable for shorter punches. But I also think that Michael Johnson might have a more calculated, a more accurate shot. So I think he might actually land cleaner shots on Drew. And the other thing as well is Dober had that stoppage from a cut, didn't he? So yeah, the other thing as well is like these guys have had so many fights. Like, where does damage come into it?
Hmm.
You know? Well, I don't remember a time when Michael Johnson had a fight stopped from a cut.
And he just, like, Johnson is another one that has really good fight instincts.
Yeah.
Like, that fight versus Ottoman, where he was kind of going backwards and he used the frame to not only create the distance and the space for his punches to be able to whip around, but also, like, once he landed on the floor, that follow-up shot came from, like, he just whacked him, but I meant it.
Where are we on stats for this one? So 5'8 for Dober, 5'10 for Michael Johnson, 3-inch reach advantage for Johnson as well. All the rest of the stats are relatively even. Like, strikes landed per minute leads slightly towards Dober, 4.52 compared to 4.28. 41% striking accuracy compared to 39% in favor of Dober. But then 58% striking defense compared to 52% for Dober. See, I feel like Michael Johnson's probably just going to land more significant shots to do more damage. But if Dober's smart, he's going to beat the hell out of that lead leg.
Mm.
Because it's just so vulnerable and it would take away Johnson's whole game.
Yeah.
Which way are you going?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Drew.
Oh, yeah. What, how? Finish?
I think so. Although Johnson looked really good against Sal Huber. When was it that?
I just kind of feel like maybe he's turned a bit of a corner because he's of where he's at in his career. I mean, they're both in their 40s, aren't they? Or late 30s.
It's a little bit different because, like, Drew was coming off that 3-fight losing streak. And you could tell after the Kyle fight, it was almost like, I'm glad it wasn't another loss, like, in a row. While Johnson's on a 3-fight win streak, so he's more like, yeah, dude, still got it.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, mentally they're in a little bit of a different place, even though they're both veterans.
So how does that play in then? Do you think that benefits Dober?
Because I think, well, if Dober wouldn't have had that victory against Kyle, I think that victory against Kyle kind of gave him...
Took a bit of pressure
off. Yeah, like, sometimes it just lets you breathe a little bit to come back to a more realistic of your skills fight and not just you in your own head.
I would, no matter what camp I was in, when I got the opponent's name through, I'd have thought to myself, man, that's a good fight. Mm. It's a good fight for us. I think both of them would have thought the same thing. Oh, it's a good fight for us. This is a really winnable fight. Because there's so many times where, like, look at the next fight. Like, and Rob Font's been playing this. Well, it's okay. Let's finish.
Who are you going with? Choose.
I'm going to go Michael Johnson.
Yeah.
I think he's going to get his leg beaten up a little bit, and I think he's going to get roughed up a little bit, but I think he'll land the better shots. And I think he's probably going to do damage. He might even get a TKO finish.
Yes. I think, he's a really good fighter. Yeah. He's like...
They both are.
Yeah, they both are.
I just feel like his accuracy might make a difference in this one. And because of the damage on Dober's face already, you know what I mean? Like, he's got a big old face.
Yeah, but Dober got you know, face. Like, well, against like Bobby guitar. Green. Like, Bobby Green, King Green, my bad.
King. All hell. What I will say, though, King Green has now started to fight a lot like Crazy Horse, but he's also now adopted his nickname as his actual name, which means he can have a new nickname. So I think he should adopt Crazy Horse's nickname. He should be Crazy Horse
and
King
And they come
Green.
Out with a teddy bear.
The stuffed animal and pull it apart in the corner. I used to love Crazy Horse. I think he's still fighting, isn't he? Like 375.
He's really funny. Like, if you haven't, just Google it. Like, honestly, you'll have a good time.
Yeah. Watch it. Watch Crazy Horse against Mishima.
All right, we're going to... let's
watch Crazy Horse against Mishima. He calls him Mishimash. It's brilliant.
There are some people that like their names are a little bit too easy to make.
I'm looking him up now. I'm looking his record.
All right, before you look up his record, who are you choosing?
What are we talking about? I'm gonna take Michael Johnson.
By what? Decision?
I think he might. I'm gonna go third round stoppage.
Third round stoppage. Okay. I'm gonna go.
Go on.
Dober knockout.
Knockout. What round?
Second. Ooh. Late second.
I think he's gonna
get hit a little bit first. But, you know, like, he doesn't get... That's why I think that victory last was good. Because if he was on a 3-5 win streak, it wouldn't have been, like, against King Green, where he would have got punched a lot and still been smiling, like, oh, I'm having a good time. It would have been more, like, daunting. But now, he's had a little bit of breathing room. That means Johnson's going to be loose and he's going to tag him up, but he's just going to stay calm. And, you know, he's going to get there in the end.
See, I like this fight because... It's very different to the next fight where Rob Font, and this is what I was going to say, Rob Font is finding himself in this circumstance again where he's fighting someone that's had half as many fights and is the one that the UFC want to push. Do you know what I mean? It always seems to be like Rob Font's in that place now. He's like gatekeeper, litmus test for these young guys coming up. And interestingly, you know, he's like, he always has a good fight, no matter who he's up against. And sometimes he's up against a prospect and he's too much for them. But if he wins, it's always going to be Rob Font style of fighting, which is march them down, box them up a little bit, snatch guillotines as they you know, try and take you down. And the one time where he's been forced to pay is when he's just kind of, he's given a lot of space. And he just marches forward. And he's like, when he's given so much space, it's like he almost loses his boxing footwork.
Mm.
And he starts to just kind of walk. And then they start to walk him onto punches. And that's a bit of a... That's kind of what I expect in this fight. Because it's like... I mean, he's got the reach advantage compared to... Let me regroup. 5'8 for Rob Font. 5'9 for Raul Rosas. But Rob Font's... reach is 71 inches compared to 67 for Rosas. That's a decent reach advantage. Mm-hmm. And Rob does tend to kind of march forward and reach really long with his punches. I just feel like he sometimes walks onto stuff because he gets sick of chasing people down.
And he can be winning the whole round and then get dropped. Like when he fought Aldo, how many times was he winning the round and he got dropped? I think like 3 of the 5 rounds.
Yeah.
I would have.
I like watching Rob Font. I always have done. I think he's a very good fighter, but he's like, he's found that kind of rhythm that he's kind of settled into.
Cheeto was another one that happened against him. Like, he was doing a really good job, you know, like scoring, causing damage, and then bam, gets hit with one that just didn't. I don't know why he doesn't look like he recovered that well.
Did Martinez drop him in the second round? I feel like that was in the second round. There was a he was just like, because Martinez was doing the same as what he was doing last night.
Mm-hmm.
He was just moving constantly, creating loads and loads of space. And Font just marched him down. Then maybe not. It's not on that fight. The Yanez fight was great, though. You see, that's where you see a version of Rob Font where you're like, man, he can beat anybody in this division.
And as well, Kyler Phillips is really good.
Great fighter, yeah.
Really, really good. I think maybe sometimes he has so much ability that it can derail him from like having like Rob Font knows what he's going to do, for example. He just does what he's going to do to whoever he's fighting.
Yeah.
And I think Kyler has so many of like options that sometimes that can be a little bit difficult for him to choose because he can do so many different things.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay then. Do you think Raul Rosas might have a similar kind of problem, or do you think he's more direct with his game?
I think one of the issues with Rosas is it's not necessarily an age thing. I just think it's a little bit of like a maturity thing. And I think, for example, that's why he lost against Christian Rodriguez.
Mm.
Part of the reason, and I saw it a little bit in his last couple fights too, where he'll look for the back and like, dude, just chill out for like 2 seconds. And
but that is what we see with a lot of these younger prospects that are coming through, is that especially the ones that have had like 5 or 6 fights outside of the UFC, and then they like, and they've had a sprint through a bunch of people, and they've beat them all in a similar kind of time with a similar kind of way. It's like, okay, this is what I do. I just attack and I go relentlessly.
And they get it. And then they gas out.
Yeah.
It's just like, wait, what
is
going on?
This is where I feel like Rob Font has got an advantage here, because he can kind of, if he applies his fight IQ, he's got a lot of experience. I mean, what's his record? It's 22-9.
Hmm.
And he's been in the UFC for a long time. So he's been at that high level for a long time. And he's from Calvin Cater's camp, right?
Yes,
like, there's a good group of guys in that. Yeah,
he did
like
his training camp in at TriStar, and one of the things that I saw that he said, he was like, "This is the smartest, hardest training camp I've had." He was actually scheduled to fight Rosas on Noche.
Oh, was he? Yeah.
Yeah.
But like consider the fight that Max Holloway had against Calvin Cater, mm-hmm. right? That it could look exactly like that. But the difference is Rosas tries way too hard in the first round to get him out of there. And then Rob Font starts to kind of walk him down and sink a few shots into the body, get into level change and maybe, you know, tangle his neck a little bit. But I don't know. This is one of those fights where it's like, let's Rob Font's a name that people will recognize. Let's put another win on Rosas' record.
Yeah,
and the thing is,
the
like,
last fight that he had against Vince made a lot of really basic mistakes in that. There was one point where Rosas would have fell off the back, but the way that Vince what he grabbed actually created a closed circle that kept him on the back, and I'm like, bro, when you let go, like, you're making it hard on yourself. It wasn't something that Rosas did that was super good in that position. It was like a monumental mistake.
But see, in grappling exchanges, I don't think Rob Font would make a mistake like that. I think he's got too much experience and fight IQ. He gets out of shape when he gets extended, when people give him too much space, because much like Calvin Cater, I would imagine that him and Calvin Cater sparring, they might as well wear shoes. Like, I bet they don't do much kicking. I bet a lot of it is boxing. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of boxing sparring. They probably even train in a boxing gym with boxers and wear shoes while they're sparring. Because it's like the way that he steps, it's like he's walking with shoes on. It's not like MMA footwork.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where he can get overextended. He's forcing him to step and cross his feet. And I think if Rosas can keep creating space, he'll be able to walk Rob Font onto stuff.
Yeah, he has good like out and then back in footwork, but then I think that could also work against him where Rob Font can time him, especially onto a right hand, because Font does a good job at not only throwing the jab but using it as like a test. Like, sometimes he strikes, other times he's doing it to draw counters.
Yeah. Rob Font's been stopped once by submission. Who was that? Pedro Munoz in 2017 by guillotine.
Oh, yeah, I saw that loss.
That was the last time he lost by everything.
But he was a desperate takedown attempt after being caught while opening too much on a counter.
Right.
Like, the counter that he threw was wild even for him.
Yeah, and Pedro Munoz's guillotine is mental.
Yeah, he was already really hurt, basically. Yeah. It was a desperate shot.
So what's your pick for this one, then? You think Rosas gets it?
I think Rosas, but I think by decision, I think Font will do a lot of the correct things, but like Phillips was able to get him down off a head outside single quite a bit, like very easily, and it's shown that the kryptonite of Font can be that as well. Not that Rosas has, don't necessarily think Rosas has the best wrestling in comparison to where his level is at grappling. Like, he's a better grappler than he is a wrestler.
Yeah.
But yeah.
When was the last time Rob Font won by a submission? A guillotine. Douglas Silva de Andrade, 2017, right before he loses by guillotine to Pedro Munoz. That's crazy. He's got some solid wins on his record, though, Rob Font. Thomas Almeida, that was a hell of a fight.
Yeah.
But
like, so which on, way are you going? On some you... of these picks, I also take into consideration some of the wars like they've had, because I think that like it takes away a little bit from your soul.
Your soul.
Yeah.
That's dark. My goodness.
Well, is I mean,
it is some
true,
Zapley.
Okay.
That's what Rob Font needs. He's born in the 80s. Born 87. My goodness, Rob. Get yourself some T1.
Okay, I'm going to go with Rosas Jr.
Okay. I kind of feel like just picking opposites to you all day today. I don't know why that is. I kind of feel like, I think you're right, though. I think Rosas is going to have to work hard for it, but win a decision.
Yeah, like, it's just that. Like, don't think that you're a boxer, because we saw Rosas in Vegas quite a bit, like while I was doing the camp. He was always around people that were doing like boxing, because they have a really strong boxing team there. And he was surrounded like by those people. So he has been guided and getting better and better throughout the fight. And as well, I saw a little bit of his like wrestling and stuff, and it looked good, you know?
I wonder how much of a disadvantage his jaw is to him in certain positions.
Or an advantage, you try to get a rear naked choke, he puts his chin down, you break your forearm.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
Like, but like think about yourself in a guillotine. Do you know what I mean? I wonder if he's got more of an awareness to those submissions, because it's more difficult to get out once he's in them.
Well, Vince, what was it? I think he was going for like a... He wasn't really going for a Doris. He kind of like fell backwards, kind of weird, but Rosas was kind of caught in that position, even though the submission itself wasn't really like ideal for the position.
Yeah.
But he did look like he was stuck there, because even the commentators were like, but yeah, that's not going to do anything. And they're like, oh no, but he looks like he's struggling.
Yeah, yeah. Like, even imagine if he got caught in like a Von Flew position. There's got to be, it'd be interesting. I wonder if he has to change anything that he does because of it. I always remember
I would use it to pressure into people. Like,
there is a submission on someone's record, like early UFC, which was chin to eye socket. That's literally the submission on their record. But I always remember there was a fighter from the Lions Den who used to train with Ken Shamrock, and his name was Tra Teligman, and he had no pec on one side. And I always wondered, like, he had like top, like the top of his pec was there, but the underside muscle was missing, like as a birth defect. And so I always wondered if he got extended into an armbar on that particular side, whether he would have the same kind of strength.
Oh yeah, you like know what I mean? Pull back here.
So like if you're fighting him and you're going, okay, I'm in guard, I'm attacking one of the arms, like attack the one that's got less muscle mass, you know? I'm always looking at things on people and like, okay, oh, there's a scar there or there's damage there or whatever, and there's always something that is a physiological
target,
benefit or detriment. Like your Romero, has got the scar down the back of his neck because he's had his...
Doesn't Cowboy have one as well?
He has one on his stomach, which is a weakness. But the one on, well, perceived weakness as far as striking goes. But Yoel Romero is, I think he's got a couple of vertebrae fused, which I think would be a benefit because your head's not going to turn and move as much, is it? Which is probably why no one can knock him out. He's, his head doesn't move from his shoulders. He's like... Okay, so you go in Rosas. Yeah, I think we're both picking the same thing, aren't we? Rosas by decision. Gonna have to work hard for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't surprise me if Rob Font catches him with something and drops him as well, you know what I mean? Just brings a bit more chaos and drama to it, but I don't know. I like Rob Font, but I think he's gonna find himself continuously in this position where he's like gatekeeper to the next young guy coming through. More fights like Dober Johnson where you've got the old guys, older guys. Get yourself some Zapley, old boys.
Speaking of. Co-main event.
Oh, yeah, Derrida. Of course. Derrida, yes. Again, a really interesting fight. Like, two really, really fun fighters, two good grapplers. Derrida's ground game is ridiculous. We talked a lot to Costello, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago in Amsterdam about it. Like, an amazing ground game. Really, really good knees to the body. Wahalio is a better striker, considerably, I would say. But, you know, both coming off a loss, both trying to find their place in this division that's wide open. Middleweight's always wide open. I don't know why, but it always seems to be in constant flux. Like, Strickland had a great performance of the week, but these two guys are like, where are we? 7-8. You know what I mean? They're both within...
Yeah.
Two wins of a title shot, really. And of course, Derrida uses Zapley, so he's going to be supercharged. You're laughing at me. Okay, how do you see this one going?
Okay, so both of their last fights have been a loss, which makes this interesting. I think we should dive into this a little bit. Dude, you have to.
I'm diving.
How else are you going to make, you know, it more interesting than them just punching each other? So, okay. We have Caio Borralho, right? Main event versus Nassourdine Imavov. And those the stats do not do the justice by how Nassourdine just steamrolled through Borralho.
That was a hell of a performance.
That was like slick.
Yeah.
Slick striking, slick counter. Even the, I think Nassourdine felt how slick he looked while he was doing it, and all the crowd was going crazy. So, in the mind of Caio Borralho, this is bad because he was 7-0 in the UFC, and Nassourdine just had like a showed him, I am a whole different level than you. We can fight over and over again, and I will beat you every time.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I got from the fight. I know the stats look a lot closer than, but just watch the actual fight.
Yeah, it was a beatdown.
Yeah.
Okay, but do you think it changes, though, that Derrida's, like, such a grappler?
Listen. You asked me, so...
All right. Carry on.
All right. Now... Now I lost my train of thought. Okay, so that just happened, right? The fighting nerds were like doing great. Same night, what's this boy? Ruffy also lost, got taken down, and oh my goodness, fighting nerds took a hit. Now, other side of the story. We have Derrida, who was doing fantastic within the UFC, you know, knees to the body against Bo Nickel, rear naked choke, arm triangle versus Mershon.
You can never say his name.
Dude, like, just, I look at it. And
I told you, you gotta write it. You gotta write it phonetically.
Okay, well, that's another skill I have to learn how to.
Phonetically.
Okay, you should write that phonetically.
Mia, as in no, it's simple. It's Mia, as in meerkat, and shart, as in, like, miscalculated.
Oh. Okay.
It takes a second. It's not one of them pennies that spins around.
Okay. So basically, the Brandon Allen fight was a little bit like what I talk about, what I was kind of mentioning with like Rosas.
Yes.
But not exactly the same. It was kind of like he's in that position. He thought he was going to get it. Usually he does get it. Didn't get it. Brandon Allen kind of, it was more that he didn't overextend himself than that he super defended or did something well, right? And then De Ridder caught that reverse in like inverted triangle. Remember in one? That is like one of my favorite submissions. It's so incredibly cool. And he tried it several times against Brandon Allen. Didn't work. Overall, Allen MMA'd De Ridder jiu-jitsu. Now, bam, another layer. Here we go.
Vitaly Big Dash.
Lot of crime books, so excuse
that's what
me.
It is, isn't it? It's yeah, the crime books.
I think so.
You're Sherlock Holmes in it. We've got that Queen's Gambit moment where Bohalio is on the ceiling doing some weird stuff.
Well, yeah,
he
was a chemist, and so he's going to think about all this, right? So Bohalio just on Karate Combat beat Brandon Allen in a grappling match. Now, here's what happened in the grappling match. I'm just going to do it real quick so you don't have to watch it. It started off, Brandon Allen was pretty much the only one engaging in the wrestling, but wasn't really doing well. So it was kind of like where two jiu-jitsu people go and they just don't wrestle that good. And then Brandon Allen put himself in an unadvantageous position for trying to get the takedown. And Bohalio just did a good job at neutralizing it, right? Mm. And then the second round started. And because it's on the pit, basically, as soon as you grab somebody's legs because of the slope, they're going to fall down.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was able to just like pressure pass him and like just stay on top and do a good how you would want in MMA to get the thing.
Yeah.
So he got the victory, clear victory.
Okay. But more importantly than that, who would have won in MMA?
Oh, Bohalio would have won that.
You think? MMA.
Yeah.
So then Bohalio can do to De Ridder what Brendan Allen did to him, then? Do you think he can take him down? Do you think he's going to keep him on the feet? My issue with this is that De Ridder doesn't mind being on the ground, and I think his takedowns and jiu-jitsu is better than Bohalio's.
Yes. Although Bohalio beat Allen in the grappling department, it was a little bit more like Allen didn't do a strategy for that type of jiu-jitsu match, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't the right approach. Not necessarily he didn't have the right grappling skills. And they're both really big for the division.
Yeah. Yeah, but Derrida's like 6'4". So there's like 6'1 to 6'4", 75 reach to 78. So Derrida's taller and it's got a longer reach.
Yeah,
I could just kind of see it.
Like, after 6 foot, you're a big individual.
Yeah, but it does make a difference, especially if like, you got to think where Bohalio's coming in from. Like, he just got walked down and beaten up by Imovov, who stands heavy on his back foot and just kind of walked him down and beat him up. And I'm not saying Derrida's got that kind of striking, but he is bigger. And he does stand heavy on the back foot. Mm. And anything that Bohalio does when he comes in, he's going to be susceptible to those knees to the body. Like I kind of feel like Bohalio could be walked down because he doesn't really know how to start the fight. Like, I think if he ends up in top position, he can defend a lot of the submissions and kind of weird De Ridder out. I think that'd be the smart thing to do. I just think he's got way less chance of landing in top position against De Ridder. Like, I feel like De Ridder's...
Yeah, but De Ridder, ended up on the bottom of Allen, not because...
Yeah.
It was because he fell off and he just stayed in that position. And, like, Bohalio in that grappling match showed a good ability to, like, I'm not rushing, I'm winning, so I'm not going to crazy look for a submission and get it. I just need to win this.
Mm.
And... You know, that was kind of like Brandon Allen's approach, and he was having a lot of success on that. Obviously, like, De Ridder didn't really look himself. He's talked about his health and things, but that fight was 4 months ago. It's not really a long time to recover from anything that...
Yeah, for sure. No. But this is the thing, is it's not the issue with Derrida is nothing. I don't know where he's at injury wise or health wise, but almost always Derrida loses fights because he expends too much energy in the wrong places doing the wrong things. But that's almost always because he's under pressure striking. He can't deal with striking. He doesn't have a good striking defense.
Mm-hmm.
So it would require someone with good striking and confidence to move forward and stuff, takedowns, to be able to put Derrida in a position where he starts to look uncomfortable on the feet. And I just don't know if Bojadio's got that confidence right now after his last fight. Like, my concern is that he's going to kind of wait and Derrida's going to start to walk him down. Bojadio finds himself back up against the fence and Derrida's stepping in with high knees and clinching him and then creating takedown exchanges. Yeah. And obviously with Derrida being taller, stepping in with knees, he puts himself in an overhook position, frame on the far side, and then he starts to work his trips and reaps. I feel like Bojadio, this is a very, very winnable fight for him. But I feel like he has to go and take the fight. And I don't know if his mindset is going to be in the right place after the Imovov fight.
Yeah, I think that has to have played. Because against Jared Cannonier, during the fight, well, he looked a lot bigger as well. And I think that looks like it gave him confidence. But he was just sort of in control in the fight and just continued to be in control. And versus Nasrdin, it was just like, you are not as good as...
Mm.
Especially in that department, which he prided himself so much in. It was somebody who had like a similar sort of game plan execution, but done much better. But we also know that Derrida is a grappler, so he might not feel like, okay, one thing's Nasrdin outstriking me like that. Derrida's not going to do that. Because although Derrida does have those really powerful, dangerous knees, he did throw like 7 in a row to Robert Whittaker after hurting him, and then Whittaker overhanded right him to a knockdown because he just got so happy throwing that same same weapon that was working, but under a different...
I'm just reminding myself of the knees. Of the Bojadio Paul Craig fight, because like that is a kind of a good trial run for this. But he's got, oh man, that left hand that he lands to finish, he's got to have confidence to fight like that. And the difference between Paul Craig and Derrida is, like I was saying, like Derrida burns unnecessary energy because he miscalculates sometimes, but his miscalculation is based in confidence, whereas Paul Craig's miscalculation is based in a lack of confidence. No disrespect to Paul, but in certain circumstances where he's better to tuck up and put his chin down, he tends to try and move his head away. And he's doing that on the back foot, whereas Derrida's doing it on the front foot, moving forward behind his knees. He's a little bit reckless with his striking because he doesn't really care where he lands.
Yeah.
And I feel like that could be really, really valuable in this fight. Just a little bit of recklessness is going to give him the advantage to take the front foot.
Mm. Yeah. I'm going with Bojadio.
Are you really? Yeah. Okay. So how do you think he's going to do it? Do you think he's just going to out-MMA him?
Yeah, I think so. Like, because that's really what he did, especially in the beginning, as you were talking about with Paul Craig. Like, he didn't go, oh, I'm in a good position where I can ground and pound him. He went, nah, cool. You down there, stay down there. I'm come back up and I'll punch you again.
Yeah.
You know, like, and he showed that against Brandon Allen, which is why he was able to win. It wasn't necessarily better grappling. It's hard to explain.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, I'm going with Bojadio.
Mm. I'll go the opposite way. I think Derrida's going to do it. It wouldn't surprise me if we see him land a knee to the body, end up in top position, and work an arm triangle, or land a knee to the body, Bojadio gets buckled, and then he finds himself in some kind of high elbow guillotine or something. I wouldn't even surprise me if he uses that. You know, the Hermansson,
the Jokerteen,
something like that would suit him. That's the kind of circumstance I can see Derrida winning in.
So you're going by submission?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm going decision. All right. The BMF.
Okay.
I should look up how Luke Rockhold did the the sign. So,
Lou, oh yeah, kind of like Ricky Bobby in his first interview on Talladega Nights. I don't know what to do with my hands. Just put them down. okay, main event.
He's a great, sorry, you know, sometimes you just have those moments.
So main event, yeah. For the BMF belt, Max Holloway taking on Michael Chandler.
No, I can't. Honestly, like, I can't believe you did that to me yesterday. I should be angry today.
It's just so easy to wind you up.
Okay, imagine you think it's Max Holloway versus Charles Oliveira. Super excited. You like both of them. And, like, you're playing this dilemma in your head because you really like both of them, but one has to lose. You're like, oh, why? And then you change one of the most loved fighters for Michael Chandler. Like Michael Chandler.
One of the most loved fighters for Michael Chandler. How mean.
No.
You say Michael Chandler's not one of the most loved fighters. Did that guy not just get Michael Chandler tattooed on his arm?
Okay, yeah, but, like,
I mean, to that guy, he is the most loved fighter.
All right, but... You just gotta know.
It wasn't that my you're fault. Not... I will find the Instagram account and hold them accountable for their fake news. The main event is actually Max Holloway against Charles Oliveira.
It's always been that, by the way.
Has it? I don't know. Okay, so of course this is a hell of a fight, an incredible rematch.
Did you know?
But this is the thing, is like the first one wasn't really a fight, was it? It was inconclusive because Charles Oliveira was like.
To be fair, he double legged straight into that. when he hit the fence, I was like, oh.
He was also in the wrong weight class.
Yes, but I think, okay, this is this storyline of this fight.
Oh, okay.
I think this has happened once again to Charles Oliveira. Because I don't know if you've seen some of the pictures and stuff. Like, he's training SNC. He looks too big for the division now.
You think he's going to struggle to make weight?
Yeah. Well, he always struggles to make weight. He needs to have, like, 30 people, you know, like, praying with him to make weight.
I could never do it. It
shouldn't be that much. Okay, I know I'm not particularly big for the division, but I think if you need that many people praying and everybody crying, then probably you're in the wrong weight class.
And you are. And you're still so dramatic when you couldn't wait.
I'm not. I just ask you how much time I have left.
It's been 10 seconds since the last time you asked. This blanket's not hot enough. Make this blanket hotter. Okay. Go and stand outside. It's Vegas.
He's like,
no,
weight
she's a
cutting.
Sweetheart when she's
He's so useless. He like barely keeps track of the time.
Because time doesn't matter. Oh, sweat,
when I was fighting, I had to cut so many pounds and you barely have to do anything.
I save all of my weight cutting stories for that particular day when you're weight cutting.
I literally only ask, oh, how many more minutes?
How many more minutes? It doesn't matter how many more minutes.
Okay, well, for Oliveira, it really does, right? And I think that was one of the big, big mistakes from Max Holloway was when he went back down and fought Topuria. Like, dude, you look so great against Justin Gaethje. And Justin Gaethje's a good size, lightweight. You look better, you move great, and then you go and become a zombie in a weight that you no longer are.
Yeah, he should have just stayed at lightweight after that, 100%.
And then he fought Poirier. He looked great. But then when he fought Poirier, now he's not like you fought lightweight again, and then you fought lightweight again to where your body's just, you need to give it time to be the size. Like when you move divisions, when you're in, you need to give yourself the time. You can't just go, oh, I'm going to make it, then I'm not. Because then it's more of like you are more or less disciplined with your diet and less about you filling out in the division. And I think that was... the shot from Topuria landed was phenomenal.
It was lovely, but it was just a silly thing to do. I think he could have moved up a weight class even before he did. Mm. And I'd certainly think going up and fighting, and it was five rounds, wasn't it? It was, 4:59 of the fifth. It was a banger of a five rounder. And then it's literally a few months later, April to October, and he's back down at
That didn't make sense to me because he looked well, like even in the interviews before the weigh-ins, he just.
So you think Charles Oliveira's gotten too big now for lightweight?
Yes.
You think you?
I think there's a few fights now that he's just a little bit, but especially now because I've seen some, you know, like training footage of him during camp and stuff and.
But okay, so here's a question. No, then.
Not that he won't make weight. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it's going to affect his ability to take a shot, and I think we've seen that versus, for example, Justin Gaethje, like dropped him a few times, and yes, he was able to drop Gaethje going backwards with his right hand and get that the transition for that back was beyond beautiful. It was incredible, but. You don't take punches as good. And Holloway has great footwork and great volume at a hard enough punching power. Yeah. Like some people have high volume but don't punch that hard. He punches hard and has a high volume.
You know what's interesting is? So, because I remember when I first started like really researching Max Holloway for Inside the Octagon, and I noticed that his output increases over the rounds and his accuracy increases. So he throws more and he lands more of the shots that he throws. And I'm just looking at this. So Max Holloway's average fight time, 16:23. That's a veteran five-round fighter.
Mm.
Charles Oliveira, with all of the five-round fights that he's had, is 7:30. And that to me shows me how the fight's going to go. Like Holloway just needs to allow Oliveira to get the first sort of 7 minutes out of his system. Because he always does stupid things and he always throws himself at his opponent in some particular way, mainly because he doesn't care where he lands on the floor. I absolutely think it would be a terrible idea for Max Holloway to entertain any kind of grappling, because I think even landing in top position, Oliveira has got enough tricks in his game in the early fight to be able to sweep and put him in top position. But once it hits the 7 or 8 minute mark, and Max Holloway's now started to warm up and he's starting to pick his pace up. Like 3, 4, and 5, a finish could come at any point in those rounds way, way easier than it could in the first or second.
Yeah.
Like I think Max could stop Charles Oliveira in any round, but I think it's like 5% chance in the first round, 10% chance in the second round, 40% in the third, 50% in the fifth. You know what I mean? Like, I just think it jumps up exponentially given the fact that Oliveira is a sprint and crash kind of fighter. And Max is a, let me warm up, let me warm up, let me warm up. Okay, pace, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like he's getting the reads, but he's just able to, oh, did you see the doing this drill and then my wife does this drill at different levels on his Instagram?
No.
Yeah, him and his wife and Rush, they're super cool. They're honestly probably the coolest little family unit ever.
One of the coolest MMA families.
Yeah by far. they're like, bro, okay, leave some cool for the rest of us. No.
So because this is a
five round?
Well, because it's a belt.
Okay, title.
Is it a title? I mean, there is a title, but does it mean they have to make 155?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. So that works against Charles Oliveira, doesn't it?
And so, I think like Max Holloway will feel again better in this division, and throughout camp, this is now the second camp in consecutively that he will do in lightweight. So he'll feel, because as well during camp, you want to have like a more or less a body weight you're doing it throughout where it's somewhat similar to where you're going to be in the fight. Like you don't want it to be like a surprise what your body feels like when you're fighting. Obviously that's not for everybody, but in Max Holloway's case, especially with the volume and the angles that he gets, the more he fully feels his body, the better. And having done this entire camp at a more healthy weight,
Yeah, I bet he's been able to train more because he's this is the other thing that people kind of don't understand, I think, about weight classes. Like there's a benefit in being in a lighter weight class because you have to do more cardio by default usually to get there. So Conor McGregor at 145 is going to have better conditioning than Conor McGregor at 155, probably not because he did any more conditioning for the fight, but because he did more conditioning for the weight.
Yeah.
Right? And it can work the opposite way, because in actuality, if you're someone like Max Holloway, who's just got incredible conditioning anyway, doing additional conditioning to get to 155 is just wasting your time. Like, what Max Holloway needs now is brain power and attention in his technical sessions, which he's going to get way more of by having more calories and less time having to be on the treadmill and draining himself. Like,
makes a big difference.
Yeah, this is going to be it's going to be a much better version of Max Holloway.
And as well, the way that, like, at the intensity that they train at Shute Box, especially during the sparrings.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard.
They're a little bit wild.
Yeah, and it's like, it's not really helpful when you already have taken so much damage throughout your career.
You know what's amazing? I'm just looking at Charles Oliveira's record. So 36-11 is his record. But that's divided up. 36-11, so 47 fights. He's been the distance 6 times. And he's lost a third of them. 4 wins and 2 losses by decision. 22 wins and 4 losses by submission. And 10 wins and 5 losses by TKO. That's effectively 3 different records just there. 22 and 4. All submission. That's mad,
that's
isn't
crazy.
It?
That's crazy.
It's insane. But again, his record just kind of paints the picture. 22 wins by submission, 10 wins by TKO. So that's 32 wins total by finish. But then how many of those were divided up into the fourth and fifth rounds? Almost none of them. Like, you've got a third round against Dustin Poirier, a third round against Kevin Lee, a lot of first rounds, lots of second rounds. You know, and like even early second rounds as well. Like, he's just a fast worker. I'm just trying to find the latest time of a finish on his record, but it's like mid third round. Andy Ogle, 240 of the third round, triangle. So you see what I mean? It's like his teeth get blunt really quickly in the fight, whereas Max Holloway just kind of slowly sharpens his teeth as the fight goes on. I think Holloway by stoppage. I think a TKO. And I don't think it's going to be because Charles Oliveira is actually beaten up. I just think he's just done. He's not going to win the fight. He maybe won the first round by 10-8, but it's been downhill since then.
Yeah. He is super, like, his energy is so different. Yeah, like, I just remember in New York before we got into the bus, like, because he was right in front of me and he was about to get in and he was just like being super normal. And then he puts his hood and I'm like, what's he doing? And he starts kind of like to run. And then as he's getting in, you see everybody going crazy for him. But and really. He's so great with the fans as well as Holloway. But the love that he has is... like, he deserves the love that he has. He's an awesome person and fighter.
I mean, both these boys could slick, retire, really, couldn't they?
They're both so slick.
I think Max Holloway does it.
And I like the kicks that he was using, sort of like with his back leg, like going straight into the hip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was doing a whole bunch
We saw that last night with King Green, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
That inside lead kick that he was doing on Zell Huber's lead leg.
Yeah.
So who are you picking?
Holloway.
Okay. How?
I think by knockout.
Which round?
Third
round. Yeah. I think you might be right. I think it might be
I like third, picking third, against Oliveira.
Yeah, I know, but like, you also don't like picking against Max Holloway. I'm just being completely objective. I think Charles Oliveira is one of the most fun fighters to watch.
Yeah.
But that's because he jumps into range and eats punches when he doesn't need to. And like Max Holloway.
That's why it's the BMF vote.
Yeah, but you know.
And okay, how much does that, real quick, last tangent. How much is the BMF as a title play into how you're supposed to fight, because you can't lay and pray if you're fighting for the BMF belt. I mean, if somebody throws something into the cage, that's
I agree with you. I agree with you, but at the same time, it depends on what you think is bad. Like
laying on somebody.
But I mean, like what is bad. like what makes a BMF? Like Max Holloway being a BMF. Max Holloway against Calvin Kattar was the most BMF performance of his whole career.
Yeah, that was right. Really
it was just, but the reason why that was BMF was because it was completely one sided and dominant, and he just cruised it. Right. Whereas winning in a slugfest where you both nearly go down, in my mind, is not quite as BMF. Like I would write, like the most BMF thing is to come out, slip three punches, bang, they go down, and then you're like, no one can touch me. I am Thor. Do you know what I mean? Like that is the most BMF.
Yeah.
So the easier you make it, the better. Yeah. So I don't lean into the idea of like if it's the like, you know, most reckless MFer. You get Darren Elkins in there. He's got the tattoo and everything ready to go. You know, they can't be defined by the belt. The most badass thing would be just to torch him with the first punch. Don't even touch him. Chi blast. Disintegrate. I am Raiden. That would be badass. Right?
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
I wish that I could do that.
Like, I like a slugfest. Like, it's badass to watch a slugfest. I don't mind watching two people really. But there's something scary. Like Assassin's Creed. You know what I mean? You jump from the rooftops and stab in the neck and game over. Like, didn't even know you were there. That's badass. Take your belt off you. Bam, gone. Trousers fall down. Trousers fall smoke. Down. Gone. That's it.
You leave. Yeah.
That's it. I also think that the BMF should have a much better entrance for these fighters. Like, they should have some kind of Prince Nassim carried in on a throne or something, you know?
Can you imagine? Oh, that's awesome.
I'm gonna throw this out there. I've made a note of this actually for a call that I have next week, a PFL call. I probably shouldn't even be telling you this, but I like the banners that we had over the cage. I just don't think it's a very good aesthetic. But you know what is a really good aesthetic?
What?
Banners in an army when they're marching and they've got banners behind them. Oh, you know how the sumo guys they come out and as they're slapping themselves and throwing the salt, they've got the guys walking around with the Hello Kitty sponsor banners.
Yeah.
Like, I think we need to bring that into the BMF. They need some kind of like
have that in the like banner sort man. Of like the you Olympics I mean? when they walk the
exactly
the competitor
there
out.
There you go.
Yeah.
But just for the BMF belt. Like, and they should have their own design. Like, Charles Oliveira could have some kind of mad...
You could have, like a Hawaiian thing when you're walking out, have hula dancers.
There you go. Like,
that'd
there's definitely
really cool.
something they could do. Some kind of...
definitely not.
Some kind of banner.
My idea is fine. I know, Jamie's just like... Whatever, just end it.
What have we got after this? Have we got a little while until the next event?
I think Miami's the next one. Let's go for that.
Mm. Be a good card. Okay, so you're going with Max Holloway by stoppage.
Yeah.
Hang on, let's just have a little wrap up of the card. So you went.
So are we going from top to bottom?
Max Holloway by stoppage.
Yeah.
You said Bahalio's going to win.
Yes, by decision.
By decision. You think Raul Rosas wins a hard fought decision?
Hard decision.
You think.
Fajeda. No, wait. Dober.
Dober by.
A knockout after probably getting
outboxed.
Outboxed.
Okay,
yeah.
And then Fajeda to replicate what he did last time.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna go Rodriguez by war. I'm gonna go Michael Johnson. I said TKO, did I not? Later in the rounds, I think Raul Rosas. I'm on your side with that one. Hard fought decision. I think Derrida, and I think Max Holloway, TKO. I love Charles Oliveira. I just don't think he makes good decisions all the time. Awesome. It's going to be a good card. Make sure you get some Zapply. Try Zapply.com. Get yourself just get everything. Just get one of everything. Get some of the T1. Get some of the creatine. It's good stuff. It will save you carrying around something that looks like this. It's just not at all efficient. Or good for travel. not good for travel at all. It's too heavy. And also Vortex Performance Academy. Give them a follow. Check out what they're doing. You will definitely learn something. You'll get an insight into the strength and conditioning side of what some of the pros are doing as well. And yeah, awesome. Thanks, my beautiful love. Jamie, awesome. Everybody, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.